Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And what a pleasant, pleasant surprise. If none other than my good friend, Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. Professor Harvey, you don't have anything better to do than to listen to a carpetbagger like me in the morning?
No, well, I'm a scallywag, so it really doesn't
Hey, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing better. I hear your voice. How's the family?
Family's doing well. How are you
doing? Doing fine, man, but I am thrilled.
Great.
When Sam told me it's Bob Harvey, I'm saying, what? Professor Bob Harvey is on the line? Man, it's so good to hear your voice.
I was just on the internet and just surfing and looking at the state of Ohio, the state of North Carolina, and several other states that are now pushing some of these laws to arm teachers. And I'm sitting there just shaking my head, looking at all of them. And I was looking at one of these Fox websites.
So let me say this before you go any further. So people won't misunderstand. Professor Harvey is a gun owner. He is a person who trained in his military time, who trained soldiers in how to handle weapons. He's not some guy who's anti-gun. I think it's important that we lay that out first, Professor Harvey.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is that, you know, even if you had 17 to 18-year-olds, they go through about 105 modules of training. If they're going through basic training, and certainly through AIT, which is that, you know, the advanced individual training after basic training, they receive extensive training on the M16 weapon systems and the M203 grenade launcher, which is nothing more than M16 with a 12-inch tube to launch grenades. And they learn how to take it apart, put it back together, they learn how to nomenclature. Then you learn all of those things. And then on top of that, you train military personnel to fire their weapons on orders. Understand how that goes. They do it under orders. Now what you're talking about doing is training teachers. And here's the problem with that, because I also, you know, for about a year and a half, we are working through the Commission on Community Relations for the city of Milwaukee, went in and did two sessions of training for the police classes, cadet classes in the police academy up on Teutonia. And one of the things that we stressed is that when you are training with a weapon system, you have to understand what you're going through when you send those young police officers, men and women, into a building. If you have individuals, teachers or not, who are armed, and those are young officers, oftentimes they're the young ones going through first because they're the gung-ho ones they go through first, but you send them in there, though, even seasoned police officers. Earl, they don't know who the enemy is, and they're not for the first few frantic seconds they go through there. They're trying to get in there and protect and save the personnel, including the babies, the children, in the school. And now you're going to complicate that by sending in police officers in a building where you've got also halfway or semi-trained teachers and administrators armed. And you're going to create more confusion. It's going to slow down their reaction and response time. And you're going to jeopardize the children and the staff even more. Who's the enemy and who's not? And we need to be clear on that when we send those police officers into those buildings. And that's the travesty of this whole argument, where you see all these states now that are passing these laws, wanting to talk about, and talking about Ted Cruz and the rest of them are hardening the targets. We don't need to harden the targets of our children. If we can't protect them, then we've got no justifiable reason to exist as a country. It's asinine. It's insane.
You know, Professor Harvey, to say without thought that we're going to put guns in the hands of teachers. Did anybody ask the teachers if they want guns in their hands?
I guarantee. Not only that, Earl, it's also suppressing the idea of freedom of thought and freedom of exchange in the classroom, especially when you get to the older students. If they're going to exchange ideas and have academic freedom, you stifle that when you got guns sitting in the classroom.
So Professor Harvey, let's examine a scenario where that happens. All right, let's say they're in kindergarten, grade school. And the teacher, what is the teacher going to do? Have the gun on the desk, in the desk, unlocked? Because if around children who we know can move around and get access, they're certainly not going to wear it on their hip. Let's say you move up to a high school level. And
that's right, even if, and Earl, on that quick thought, even if they got it locked away somewhere, they got to get to it.
That's my point. It makes no sense.
And a person coming through the door with an automatic weapon system, you know, like AR-15 or whatever, that individual, knowing full well that he's that teacher's arm, he's going to cut him down first.
So, Professor, I mean, what thought did they put into this?
None except the idea that they're going to the extreme. You got 400 million guns. And their only solution with the conservative right is to arm more people. In other words, Earl, they're engaging in an arms race. And let me tell you something about arms races throughout world history. There has never been anyone to win the arms race. Because every time you come up with something, they come up with something more. And it's amazing how we sit here and talk about more guns. The only way to stop a bad guy with the gun is a good guy with the gun. Well, who in the hell determines what a good guy is? Because everybody is good until they commit a crime. I mean, that 18-year-old, he was good until he decided to go out there and take a gun and kill somebody. I mean, when are we going to learn that the logic, Earl, it makes no sense. It's a blind logic going back to the time of the medieval ages, to the dark ages in world history. And nobody is bothering to put the brakes on it. And I've always said the most responsible party and population that's going to have to deal with this, and it's just like a Jolly said the other day on MSNBC, the only people that's going to change this are those people who right now profess to be the conservatives or the Trumpians. Some of them got to get the light bulb has to go on, and they have to realize that going down this path is a path, going down the path of the dark ages. We're stumbling back into the 7th, 8th, and 9th century of world history while the rest of the world is moving forward into 22nd.
But you know, Professor Harvey, that's not just happening with individual gun ownership. It's our federal government that continues to...
Well, see, the federal government, it's stale and it's dead right now, Earl, because a large part of our population send these individuals to Washington in the House and the Senate with the intent of blocking anything. In other words, they're told that if you participate in any way and cross over the aisle, we are going to primary you.
Right.
And they are scared to death. And many of your Democrats today that are in a lot of their districts, they're in pretty safe districts. But it's in those gray area or those purple districts all over the country, like in the case of Manchin in West Virginia and the young senator from Arizona. They are scared to death.
Christian Sinema.
Yes, they are scared to death of crossing over or doing anything that may upset their conservative base. When you govern scared, you don't govern at all. And that's been the way it's been, actually, for about the last 30 to 40 years. This country has found itself stumbling through the dark ages of anarchy by running away from their democratic responsibility to look after the good of the nation. They're worried about their primaries. They're worried about their own self-egos and an ideology that is dangerous to a democratic republic. And that's where we are right now. We're not going to get anything done with the Congress. The Congress is paralyzed with fear. And then, of course, you've got the state assemblies, which have taken off now. They're the most dangerous ones. I mean, abortion laws. Earl, just think about this process. If a 12-year-old little girl is raped or through incest or whatever, and she has a baby. She can't abort it because of the new law.
I know.
And what does it say? We already got the conservatives going on record. I saw a C-SPAN show yesterday where Republican congressmen were calling in, going after the budget. Naturally, they were blaming Biden for it. One of them said he's been wrecking the budgets for the last 2 years. First of all, Biden hasn't been in office 2 years.
Know.
You know, do your math. You can't even add straight, and then you're going to criticize. And now what you're going to do is you're going to have all these babies coming that are unwanted. Trust me, it's bad enough when you have babies that are wanted that you got to worry about. When you got babies coming that are unwanted, they're going to be neglected, they're going to be abandoned, they're going to be abused. And guess who's going to have to pay for that? Just the very society, the very Republicans who are talking about balancing the budget, they don't want to pay for welfare. They're trying to figure out a way to defund Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security if they can get their hands on it, if they get bold enough to try to touch it. So they don't want to pay for them when they get them here. But, and then if they act up, they're going to lock them up. And then if you manage to get the kids in school, one day some fool may come in there and shoot them up and kill them. Because the Republicans are allowing all these guns on the street.
You know, Professor Harvey, what you'll hear from Republicans who, when you talk about these issues, they'll say, well, you know, the Democrats, they won't ever address the fact that they've got some people who are as dangerous as anybody, any of our enemies globally. You've got some Republicans that are as dangerous as anything outside of the borders of this country. And so we've got to get to a point, Professor Harvey, where, you know, you call that like it is. You know,
but you know, when you talk about hardening targets, that's the thing that gets me. We got to harden the targets. We got to make our schools harden targets. Give me a break. We have the most powerful military the world has ever seen in world history, Earl. Do you hear me? And I've spent a lifetime of academia studying American military, you know, history. And this country has the most powerful military in world history. Now, with our elite combat of armed groups, with the special elite groups, the Marines and everyone else, the SEALs and Rangers and Delta Force and Green Beret and all those elite forces, the Air Assault and Airborne, all those elite forces. We've got all these advanced weapon systems. And now, on top of that, you want to sit right here, and of course the Republicans and some conservatives will argue that's the reason why you need a more powerful, you know, armed citizenry. Well, first of all, dummy and stupid, that's a crazy attitude to take. Because on one hand, you glorify a powerful military, and then once you create that powerful military, you're afraid that they may take your freedoms away, so you want guns to deal with them. So the key thing you have to realize there is you're not armed enough to be able to stop a tactical team coming in if they want to come in and take you out. You're not. So let's just face it. You're arguing up the wrong tree. We will never be able to out-arm our military, which we as taxpayers pay to arm and train. And so it's a stupid argument, and it's a dangerous one. And to me, what I've heard over the last couple of weeks, the most dangerous argument is now you're climbing inside of a woman's body and telling a woman what to do with her body. Earl, are we in Afghanistan with Sharia law telling a woman what she can and what she can't do? We have reduced ourselves to that.
Hey, so, Professor Harvey, a lot of stuff to talk about. We got to get you in next week, see if your schedule will allow, because we got so much catching up to do. But one of the subjects I was going to talk about today was Capitol Hill lawmakers introduced bipartisan resolution to end unauthorized American involvement in Yemen. How many of the American people know anything about our military involvement in Yemen? How many American people know that there's over 350,000 people that have been killed in the war in Yemen? How many Americans know we're in war in Yemen?
Well, how many of them even know where Yemen is? I mean, that's the first thing you have to ask yourself. And early, the big question is, I mean, which political party is pushing it? You know, I mean, who's pushing it? Is it just to make a political statement? Because every one of the presidents we've had since Ronald Reagan has had ourselves in clandestine operations combined in the Middle East doing something. That's why we have those special elite teams. They're there, and we don't even know they're there.
Yeah, and it hasn't been authorized by Congress. Okay.
No, it doesn't have to be. It's a presidential action. If he sees it necessary to go in there and take somebody out, they're going to do it.
So 360,000 people have been killed in Yemen, in a war in Yemen, that we are participating in, and the American people know nothing about it.
Well, Earl, you know, I always tell people that when I talk about, you know, those areas over there in Western Asia now and other parts of the world, I always try to tell them, do you have a map handy? And if you do, sit down and I'll talk you through the map. Because when they look at a map, then all of a sudden the red light goes on. You know, and the conflict that's going on right now in those areas of Western Asia, and that's Asia. People have to understand in the West what Asia is. Whether it's Eastern Asia, where we spend most of our time thinking about Asia, or Central Asia, which is where India and Pakistan and Afghanistan are, or when we're talking about Western Asia, which is where Israel, Syria, most of Turkey, Iraq, Iran, all those places, that's Western Asia. And if you know anything about Asian history, you will know that Western societies have had difficulty dealing with peoples in the Asian countries. And if you stop to think about it, since 1941, the United States in some form or fashion has been engaged in a war in Asia, from World War II all the way up through Vietnam, or Korea, Vietnam, and recently Iraq, Iraq, Afghanistan, and we've been flirting with conflicts with Iran, and we've even engaged in some things in Syria. And I tell people something, we haven't seen the last of what's happening there yet, because one of the dumbest things that Donald Trump did while he was in office was to sit there and announce without any kind of political fanfare or whatever, or understanding what's going on, awarding the Golan Heights to Israel. Earl, that is a recipe for disaster, and I would assure people that over the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to see a major explosion of the conflict there, because the Syrians, one of their sticking points has always been to get back to Golan Heights, just like Egypt, under Bill Clinton, had to push through and get the Sinai back for Egypt before Israel and Egypt could sit down and talk to each other. Well, once Syria gets over their revolution, you're going to see Syria come back and demand that they get the Golan Heights back. So, I mean, these are the kind of things that are going on in Western Asia that nobody talks about. We just mentioned Middle East, and we don't specify what's going on there.
So Saudi Arabia is at the root of what is happening in Yemen, and we are supporting the Saudis. And all of it is based on, you know, the resources, the oil resources.
But look at where Yemen is, Earl, and then take a look at the Red Sea. The Red Sea is right there where, you know, ships have to pass through.
Right.
It's a commerce zone where ships have to pass through, and America always has a permanent aircraft carrier station right out, even out there in the Arabian Sea or in the Indian Ocean, somewhere around the mouth of that Red Sea, going up towards the Suez Canal. And at the same time, America has a permanent carrier battle group residence in the Mediterranean, not only to support NATO, but to keep an eye on keeping open that Suez Canal.
So this is only two canals
in the world.
So that this is what they mean by always strategic interests of the United States. They never point it out. They'll just say our strategic interests.
It's strategic because 90% of the world's exports pass, you know, they 90% of the world's exports are sent to countries all over the world. Most of the exports in the world are shipped by sea. It is important that he who controls the waves controls that narrative. And the United States, there's a reason why they have 10 of those super carriers out there, Nimitz class, and now the most recent one that's coming out now is the Gerald Ford class to replace the Nimitz class over the next 40 years. Those carrier battle groups are out there, at least 7 of them at all times, 7 of the 10. Out there at all times in the oceans, and their primary objective is to keep open the Suez Canal and Panama Canal. And if you understand anything about maritime history, you know that he who controls the waves controls the world's economic market. And that entity happens to be the United States, the offspring of Great Britain, who for over 300 years, Great Britain controlled the waves and they controlled the global narrative. So that's a significant thing to learn about history and about military history. You know, so that those controls, the United States got to control the Red Sea, and they got to control the area in and around the Mediterranean, which feeds through the Suez in the Red Sea, to the Red Sea. And then they got to control the Panama Canal on both the Atlantic and the Pacific side, always keeping the carrier battle group somewhere around there to make sure that those shipping lanes for those billions and billions and billions of tons of goods sail through unmolested.
So President Biden is now talking about pulling out of this ongoing war and battle with Yemen. He announced an end to the support of the coalition's offensive operations that have caused the slaughter of all these people. And yet, you know, people talk about the slaughter of the people in Ukraine. Nowhere near the amount of people have been slaughtered in Ukraine in a sure. declared war, Professor Harvey, than the amount of people who are being killed in Yemen, and yet we're not aware of it.
Well, see, but the thing is, it's a backwater conflict, and that's how we see it. The threat to our European allies is a major threat, and you see that they're talking about 100,000 refugees coming to the United States without even a drop of thought. Just like we had all those immigrants coming from Cuba without a drop of thought, but the moment they start coming from Haiti, we had some issues.
Right.
So the same thing is happening here.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. Professor Harvey, hang on a second.
Okay, man.
Yeah, can you hang on?
Sure.
All right, hang on, Professor Harvey. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. Let me hear you say it's not. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. On the line, Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Professor Harvey, I want to move to, what happened the September 6th, not September 6th, why am I forgetting it? January 6th.
Yeah.
January 6th, Professor Harvey. After all of this time, why can't we get to the root of who caused this?
Because it's so vast, and a lot of people know who caused it, but,
yeah.
You know, there are timid individuals. Like I said, you can't get anything done in Washington. It's scared of its own shadow. It's running away from the democratic process, which is what it's supposed to do. And as a consequence, we're seeing nothing get done, and it's really frustrating to all of us, because there's no one thing I can say about the Democrats. They are not mean or nasty enough to want to fight for democracy. The Republicans, for anarchy, they will fight like hell. We saw what they did with the Hillary Clinton thing. Their right. job was to destroy Hillary Clinton so that when she ran in 2016, she'd be so scarred up that nobody would want her. And that's what they did. They started off with her emails, and then they went on to Benghazi. I'll never forget that 15-hour hearing that they drug her through in December of 2015. They drug her through the mud on that just to scar her up. And one of the Republicans, congressmen, because they had control of the House at the time, and one of them said, we accomplished our job. Our job was to make her look bad and skin her up. And amazingly, the moment Donald Trump won the election, even though he lost the popular vote by almost 3 million, the moment he got in the White House, it stopped. All of that wrangling about what happened in Benghazi and the whole bit and the emails, you haven't heard anything else from them. And the same thing happened when they impeached Bill Clinton. All of those women they kept dragging out there. And the moment Bill Clinton was impeached, All of those women went away until Donald Trump drug them up in the 2016 campaign. So it's amazing how they are all of a sudden, and the same thing is true with the budget. They raised all of that hell about, you know, the budget and how we're overspending when the Democrats are in the White House. But the moment when Donald Trump was in, you didn't hear a peep about them overspending. That man spent $7 trillion in 4 years, and you didn't hear a peep out of them. You didn't hear them complaining about Social Security or any of that. They kept their mouths shut.
Go ahead, Professor Harvey.
So the tragedy is that the American people, at least the ones who vote for those individuals, don't seem to see the irony, that there's a contradiction that's there. I've always said that there's a contradiction of the conservatives, and that perhaps the late Rush Limbaugh said it best when Donald Trump got in, and he came out and just openly said, we were talking about balancing the budget. We've never been concerned about balancing no budget. It's all about power, and he's right. He was right. That's all they want is power. Once they get the power, they're satisfied. They don't care.
They don't care. You know, Professor Harvey, we've been watching the whining and gnashing of teeth and sniveling by Republicans here at the state level, on a national level, about the Democrats cheating in the election. And they have no proof, but they keep saying they cheated. And yet, all this money, all this time has passed, and they still keep saying the Democrats cheated.
And they're plotting.
Yeah, and they're plotting. And here we're sitting here and watching this, and it just continues to flummox me, Professor Harvey, that one party can do this, and the other party sits back and takes it.
Well, you know, the travesty of it is, Earl, that this thing is so widespread and deep that, you know, my concern is that there are a lot of those, some of those Democrats, and I would say a lot of them, I shouldn't say some, a lot of them, that are afraid of their own shadow. And a lot of them wish that they could do what the Republicans are doing. That's one of the reasons why you get so stagnant. You know, and to keep in mind that at one time, in the 1950s and 60s, in fact, all the way up to 1980, the majority of the politicians, House, Senate, and the state assemblies that existed in the South, the old Jim Crow South, were Democrats. Keep that in mind. And a good example of that old throwback group is Chuck Manson of West Virginia. Old Southern Democrats Leonard Bain Johnson was one of them.
Yeah.
So those individuals still got some of that mindset in them, the ones who have survived. And the thing that's so frightening now is that not only was it relegated to the old Jim Crow South, or what I call the old ex-Confederate South, which consisted of 11 states, but since that time, they've expanded to about 22 to 23 states where the conservative agenda is now part of the norm. And even some of those western and midwestern states and eastern states that used to be Republican have now switched, or at least moderate Democrats have now switched to conservative Republicans.
Yeah, well, see, Professor Harvey, that's the part of this, you know. When I was young, I can say that, you know, the cities and states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, those were clearly going to be Democratic strongholds because unions and blue collar workers were Democrats, and they saw themselves as, you know, the importance of the union and all of those things. But not anymore. Those unionized people have turned into Republicans.
Sure they have. Earl, that is one of the best, and I'm glad you touched on that, because that's one of the best. A lot of the people are looking for the whys. One of the main reasons for the whys is, if you look at the history of the unions, unions have to democratize our economy, and it have to build on the middle class. But there are two major quick secrets that we need to look at that's causing this change. The first is that those unions back in the day ever since the turn of the 20th century, those unions were largely populated by white males. Those white males have abandoned the union concept, and they have now become conservative.
Yeah, they have now.
That's one of the stories. The other one is this, that as the unions have died, more and more we are seeing the death of the American middle class. What has made historically, what has made our democracy work, Earl, has been the American middle class. It was the envy of the world. Everyone modeled themselves as our democracy mainly because of the opportunity of the middle class. You knew that you were never going to be super rich. Only a rare few reached that pinnacle.
Right, right.
But you could develop a lifestyle to support a family of four or five, you know, you and your wife, you know, and the wives start working in the 1960s.
Buy a home.
Right, buy a home, you know, get you a couple of truck and a car, a couple of dogs.
Put the money away to send the kids to college. Save a couple of
nickels. Put the money to send the kids to college. And the kids, you know, then they would go off to college and come back and either help out mom and dad retiring their graceful old age, or they would naturally get off and start their own families. But the American middle class is dead now. College kids graduate never more debt than their parents, you know, and previous parents before them combined. So it's like we're punishing kids for going off to college. The system is doing that automatically. And now as we take a look at more and more rural America, their children and everything are trapped because one of their greatest dreams was to leave the rural areas, go to the urban areas, get that education or that middle class upgrade, and then they could move on to the next generation. But there's a stopgap, and we're hemorrhaging right now.
And rural America used to be blue. And now rural area has decided to, you know, that blue is the problem. That Democrats have caused us all of this. The issues that we're dealing with is because of Democratic policies.
They're blaming the wrong people, just like they blame immigrants, just like they blame people of color. They want to blame everybody but accept responsibility ourselves. And see, this is where I get into some serious issues. Now, the other issue that I've noticed, and I was reading an article about that today on a Fox channel, and they were somebody of these state senate seats and legislative bodies all over the country now are passing laws to give more parents powers on dictating what their children can learn.
Yeah, right.
Now, you know, my thing is, doggone it, I understand that we have certain rights as parents. I know because my wife and I, we had to do battle with schools on several fronts. My mother had to do battle when we were coming up. But just as she was with the NAACP, and she would find a junkyard dog in a phone booth and close the door when they go in there. That's just the way she was. But, you know, in terms of what's happening now, parents need to let teachers teach. See, the teacher now has become the enemy. And I think one of the arguments that I heard one Texas politician say was that, you know, we don't need to, you know, to have teachers in the classroom teaching and making some of our kids feel bad. You can't teach history without making people feel bad. How are you going to get around it? If you talk about World War II, let's say we have children in the classroom that are of German ethnicity, and one of the largest ethnic groups in the United States are of German ancestry. So if you start talking about World War II and what the Germans did, some of them kids are going to probably feel bad or ashamed in that classroom. So but are you going to avoid teaching it? You're not going to teach it? It's a stupid analysis. You know, and it makes no sense because America was built on immigrants. Ethnic groups from Europe, ethnic groups from Africa, ethnic groups from the Americas, from all over the world. And you're going to sit there now and all of a sudden worry about a children's feelings being hurt? You know, it's asinine. Truth is the thing that will ease all pain, because once you tell the truth about what happened, then you're going to find that the kids will accept the truth. But they want to lie to them and try to make them feel good, and they get out there in that world and get their feelings hurt because they didn't know. And it's a shame to sit there and see how we're going after women's rights to reproduce. We're going after, you know, the schools and stuff, giving them guns. So now we're trying to tell teachers what they can teach.
So Professor Harvey, you see, and I see, and many other people see, this road that this nation is moving down, and the fact that Republicans are starting to swing people into supporting the insanity that is going to the people who are supporting the Republicans don't even know that the Republicans are at the root of the problems they're dealing with.
Sure, and not only, but early net analysis, which is a correct one, comes down to even a further analysis of that, and that is that those individuals who vote for people like that, they are the cause of the problem too. We can't keep making excuses. I watched a lot of times Joe in the Morning.
Yeah.
Because he was a former hardcore conservative, and now he's seen some of the error of his ways, some of them. But he keeps trying to say the Democrats are making a mistake by reaching out to rural
right.
America. Well, in the first place, if rural America doesn't want to be reached, they don't want to be reached. They want to buy and believe that lie. Just like, you know, Southern whites believe that lie that it was an invasion of their states' rights that caused the Civil War. No, the cause of the Civil War was slavery. And the Southern states wanted to impose slavery on other states. That's what the Dred Scott decision was all about. When people read the Dred Scott decision of 1857, the Dred Scott decision, it went a lot further than just going after saying that Dred Scott, was a slave for life. It didn't stop with that. It said that any compromise that the Congress of the United States had made, that compromise was now null and void. Because every citizen in this country, in this case of white males, had a right to take their property anywhere in the country that they wanted. That's what the Dred Scott decision said. And that's what angered many Northerners, saying that we don't want slavery, so if we don't want slavery, we shouldn't have to have it. But the court was saying, oh, heck no, you got to do it. And when Lincoln came in on this platform in 59 and started preaching the idea of we can keep slavery, but we're not going to expand it. That's what led to the Civil War.
So,
and what you have today in this country is individuals trying to impose their restrictive rights on others. And the people that are sending these individuals to the state capitals, to the city and county legislative bodies, and even to executive offices, and to the federal government all the way up through to the nominations and appointment to the Supreme Court, they are sending people there that are going against the grain of our constitutional rights, and they are destroying them.
So we can go ahead. No, finish your thought.
We can blame the Republicans in office. We can blame the Democrats all we want. This comes down to the American people making dumb decisions, many of them, because they think that they're going to get out of suppressing other people's rights so they can have theirs.
So
they're going to be badly mistaken.
So, Professor Harvey, you clearly pointed out what is a discussion that people don't want to have, and that's the fact that if the Democrats do what Morning Joe says, I've heard him say it over and over again. I've heard others, moderate so-called Democrats, say it. The focus has to be on you need to listen to what rural America is saying. And so what that then in turn points out is that those people who live in the cities, especially people of color who have been the deciding factor for Democrats on who's going to be the president of the United States and who congressmen and senators are going to be, that we get totally ignored in our issues at a time when the clock is being turned back. Professor Harvey, on justice and civil rights, that should be ignored.
See, the thing is also is that we, you know, I'm not going to let them off the hook either because, damn it, they've been dragging their feet too. They shouldn't have to be motivated to vote. They got to get out there and, they're going to be some long lines because the Republicans are already geared up in the key battleground states to make sure that they have their people in those polls, harassing and intimidating people. And so there's no doubt in my mind that those individuals who feel intimidated go out to suck it up and go into them polls anyway. And see, one of the things that I've always marveled at with the American people is that the worst thing in the world you could tell them is not to do something. And when you tell, look what happened when they did it in 2012. They thought they had Obama done for. And they were going to try to, they voter suppress. Wisconsin did a hell of a job trying to suppress it. Long lines in the whole bit. But them people stood in them long lines. Do you hear me?
Yeah.
And I remember some lawyers. I was at 53rd Street School, and I was monitoring that situation. They came up there. Some of them people came up there trying to harass them folk. And the last time I saw them, they were running down by your house with some folk behind them. Yeah. That's the last time I saw them. And I remember sitting there watching that. You know, and so my thing is, they know who to fool around with. They're not coming into Central City with that crap because they get chased out of there. But they are going to come out to some of these polls. And one of the things that I remember seeing, and it's something about just a heartfelt thing about America, is that there were some elderly people, one elderly white lady and one elderly black man that were in wheelchairs. The people actually stepped aside and let them go in to vote. When you get that kind of determination, nothing is going to turn it back. And that's what I'm hoping that the American people wake up to it. I'm hoping that women wake up and realize that the Republicans right now are trying to take them back to the dark ages when you tell a woman what to do with her body. First of all, it's an asinine movement because fetuses are not citizens. You don't count them as citizens. So why should you take away the rights of women to determine if a child happens to be, she happens to get impregnated and it was something that she didn't want, why shouldn't she have a right to abandon it? I understand about taking life, but if you don't want to take it on that end, on the end of birth, carrying in birth, then why are you going to take it on the other end with all these guns in the schools killing babies while they're sitting in the classroom?
It just makes no sense, Professor Harvey.
None whatsoever.
None at all. And yet, if people would just think it through, but what people are doing is allowing others to think for them.
Yes, Earl, that is the key. And you said a mouthful with that. That is the key. They want somebody to think for them. And the time is going to come when before they know it, anarchy, the very thing that they've been arming themselves and preparing for, anarchy is going to come. But it's not going to come in the way that they think. It's not going to come in the way that they think. It's going to come for everything. And trust me, when they get in power, one of the first things they're going to want to do is to confiscate the guns. And one other thing I wanted to say on this, Earl, and that is, we've talked about January 6th. The world saw the most powerful democracy in the world attacked by its own citizens. The world saw it. The whole world, including Putin and other dictators in the world, they saw what Donald Trump did.
So,
and if the American...
Professor Harvey, even with that, Donald Trump is still the front runner for the Republican nomination.
Of course he is. But, you know, Earl, I'm sensing something here, and I don't do it very often, but I'm sensing something here that he is losing some grip. He has still too much grip because the news media every day we're talking about Donald Trump. But the simple fact is that the American people for the first time are seeing some sensibility. You may not like Biden, but thank God Biden is like the other presidents. He's come in here and he's handled that office with dignity and respect. Not like that person who sat in the White House for 4 years, name calling, insulting people. I listened to his speech.
You mean that child? CPAC. You mean that child?
Yeah, I won't even put that on children. You know, he's in another place. But to sit there, he went after Mitch McConnell. He went after the Supreme Court with Roberts. He went after everybody, you know, and I think that most Americans who, even with the addition of probably about 10 to 15% of Republicans, were sick and tired of Donald Trump and all the things that he stood for and talked about. They're sick and tired of him. If you listen to his crowd right now, they're not as rambunctious because they recognize a fool when they see it. And he's an embarrassment. He was an embarrassment. He's the worst of all the presidents. I spent many hours and many years researching and writing and lecturing on presidents of the United States. And I can definitively say this without even blinking, that Donald Trump was the worst president this country has ever had. But the danger to Donald Trump, the danger is that he has set the mold for someone a lot smarter and a lot shrewder to come along and take over this country. And they can easily do it because they're laying the blueprint to do it.
And a lot more dangerous.
Yes.
You know, Professor Harvey, we got to go, but I'll reach out to you. We got to get some time next week. Thank you for calling. Okay. I'll talk to you later. Thank you, everybody who made the show go. I'll be back on tomorrow. Thank you, Sam. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Enjoy the weather. See you later.